The problem is that this audience may embrace your story, but it might not make you any money or get you elected. It's not enough to find a niche that shares a worldview. That niche has to be ready and able to influence a large group of their friends. Angels and devils. Best Buy is one of my favorite companies because they combine an obsession with data with friendly people and real style. Their current move against the devils in their business can help you understand why you need to be choosy in selecting where you tell your story. Like most mass merchants, Best Buy wants as many people walking through the store as possible. They rent in desirable retail locations, run millions of dollars worth of ads and promotions, and stock a wide range of products and price points. Recently, though, Brad Anderson, Best Buy's CEO, discovered that millions, about 20%, of Best Buy's customers were actually costing the company money. If they could focus their energy on the other 80%, he figured the stores would be more fun to shop in and they would actually increase their profitability. The problem is that Best Buy tells a story to two different audiences with two radically different worldviews. The big audience, the angels, believes that shopping for consumer electronics is fun. They believe that owning the latest LCD projector or widespread television is a luxury worth paying for. This audience relies on Best Buy for great service and a fun place to shop. They're not so price sensitive that they'll run over to Walmart the first time they can save $30. The smaller audience, the devils, believes that paying the absolutely lowest price is the entire point. Some members of this group will stoop as low as buying something, opening it up, then returning it the next day to take advantage of Best Buy's generous return privileges. The returned item goes on the half-price table, at which point the original purchaser comes back to the store and buys the original item he had returned just a day earlier for half price. As you can imagine, these two audiences tell themselves very different stories about Best Buy. The angels see the circular in the newspaper and dream about what to buy themselves as a treat. The devils visit websites like slickdeals.net and techbargains.com, sites that are devoted to trading insider tips on how to take advantage of the store. If you viewed all potential consumers the same, you'd be as happy to advertise on techbargains.com as you might be in the Dallas Morning News. Yet just because someone wants to tell themselves a lie about what you stand for doesn't mean you should encourage them. It may be counterintuitive, but Best Buy's decision to fire some customers and cater to those that share a profitable and positive worldview is exactly the right thing to do. Are Lucky Charms a health food? The cereal business had a great run. For more than 20 years, prices were raised, shelf space increased, profits went up, and demand was steady. Then Atkins hit. The worldview of a big chunk of the audience changed almost overnight. Suddenly, moms weren't so eager to relive their childhood by serving refined sugars and flours to their kids for breakfast. Interstate bakeries, the folks that bring us Twinkies and Wonder Bread, went bankrupt. All of a sudden, the lies consumers told themselves about breakfast cereal and wholesomeness were under pressure. Jay Gouliard, the guy who brought us Go-Gurt, and his team at General Mills saw the change and decided to take action. Less than 100 days after they decided to change their story, every major cereal brand at General Mills was converted to 100% whole grain. Lucky Charms' new whole grain formulation is a rapid response to a brand new worldview. The awareness among an audience of parents that whole grain food is a lot better for them and their kids. General Mills didn't invent Atkins, but once Atkins changed the bias of a large audience, General Mills was quick enough to tell a story to those people while they were still listening. Four things made General Mills' response likely to work. First, they did it quickly, so they stood out by being first. Second, the cereal still tastes great. And third, they leveraged the stories that have worked for so long, magically delicious, to give the new story weight. Finally, and most important, the new frame they are hanging around their old brands will find a large audience that shares the low-carb worldview. Jay and his team understood how to use frames to tell a different story about a treasured brand. They told a story, we believed a lie, and the word is spreading. Attention, bias, and vernacular. Attention. This is the unstated precious commodity. Consumers don't notice anything until they pay attention. And pay is the perfect word. Everyone is granted a finite amount of time per day, and how it gets used is a significant decision. Some choose to pay that attention to the stock market, making themselves aware of every tremor and ripple in the Dow. Others use that time to study Vogue, becoming experts in heels and hems. Still others choose to ignore just about anything unsolicited, focusing instead on the interpersonal activities in their lives. As a marketer, you can no longer force people to pay attention. Buying television ads or calling people at home is no guarantee that people will listen to what you have to say. This is why permission marketing is so effective. You reach people who have a worldview that the messages you promise to send them are a valuable part of their lives. This fortress of attention is not impervious, of course. People still notice things they don't intend to see. They get caught up in fads, notice unusual commercials, can't help but pay attention to something that's happening just down the street. But these are random interruptions, not the sort of predictable, scalable effects that marketers can depend on. Bias. My friend Lisa wrote a bestseller a few years ago, and reading the reviews on Amazon is an astonishing experience. About half of the readers gave the book 5 stars. They talked about how poignant and well-written the book was. They mentioned that they had bought 4 or 5 copies for their friends. The other half? They gave it 1 star. They vilified Lisa, her writing, her lifestyle, and even the people who liked the book. What's going on here? How can one book generate such diametrically opposite points of view? Simple. The book didn't generate anything. All it did was give people a chance to express the biases they had before they even opened the book. It's tempting to be a crusading marketer, to set out to turn coffee drinkers into tea drinkers, vodka drinkers into teetotalers, Republicans into Democrats. And every once in a while, you get lucky and succeed. But this is a difficult task.